I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Bruce Coburn doesn't wear his heart on his sleeve. Instead, he bears it in his songs. Songs that reveal his thoughts and emotions. Songs that are sometimes so intimate they'll make us uneasy, or so passionate they'll take us places we might never have imagined we'd want to visit. There are narratives about the wonders and the horrors he's seen traveling through Nepal, Cambodia, and Central America. For the past 30 years, he's frustrated many a critic who sought to put him in a box. What is this guy? Is he a folk singer, a rocker, a poet, an activist? He is unapologetic in his devotion to his music and his determination to put his ideas, his emotions, and his politics into song, calling for the elimination of landmines in Mozambique, urging the world and his audience to help Afghan refugees. Connection listeners, does the music and the message of Bruce Coburn carry more weight in these newer, dangerous times? Are the desires to create, to advocate, one and the same? And what's the role or the responsibility of the musician? We want to hear your thoughts. Call us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Right now, we're listening to the singer-songwriter, Bruce Coburn.
Sun's up, looks okay. The world survives into another day, and I'm thinking about eternity. Some kind of ecstasy got a hold on me. I had another dream about lions at the door. They weren't half as frightening as they were before. But I'm thinking about eternity. Some kind of ecstasy got a hold on me. Walls, windows, trees, waves coming through. You being me and I'll be in you. Together in eternity. Some kind of ecstasy got a hold on me. Up among the firs where it smells so sweet, or down in the valley where the river used to be. I got my mind on eternity. Some kind of ecstasy got a hold on me. And I'm wondering where the lions are. Wondering where the lions are. Wondering where the lions are. Oh, wondering where the lions are. Oh, wondering where the lions are. Oh, 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 oh. Orange flying boat rises off a lake. Thousand-year-old petroglyphs doing a double take, pointing a finger at eternity. And I'm sitting in the middle of this ecstasy. Young men marching, helmets shining in the sun, polished and precise like the brain behind the gun should be. They got me thinking about eternity, but some kind of ecstasy got a hold on me. And I'm wondering where the lions are. Wondering where the lions are. Wondering where the lions are. Oh, wondering where the lions are. Oh, wondering where the lions are. Freighters on the knot on the surface of the bay. One of these days we're gonna sail away. Gonna sail into eternity. Some kind of ecstasy got a hold on me. And I'm wondering where the lions are. Wondering where the lions are. Da 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 Wondering where the lions are, 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 wondering where the lions are.
Bruce Coburn, Wondering Where the Lions Are. Did you know you wrote that song 23 years ago?
No kidding. No, I do know.
Yeah. It's part of a retrospective of singles from a CD that's just out called Anything, Anytime, Anywhere. I was thinking of the name of the new CD and looking at your tour schedule for the month of March. Have you looked at this schedule?
Oh, yes.
You know, you're doing 19 concerts, 12 states, 3 provinces, 2 countries, all in 1 month?
Yes. And that's actually a slowed down schedule from the normal one, because I'm finding that I just don't want to work as hard these days. But, normally, I mean, if it were not a compilation album, if it were something new, we'd probably do that pace for a year.
There is some new music on the CD, and there's new stuff that you're working for, but largely it's the singles from 79 right on up to today, right?
That's right. In most respects, it takes up where Waiting for a Miracle left off. Waiting for a Miracle was a compilation that we put out about 12 years ago. And there's some overlap, but for the most part, it's what happened after that. And these are songs that, unlike the singles on the first collection, which was all the singles that we'd put out to that time, most of which never saw the light of day on radio, most of these songs actually did get played on the radio, to my great satisfaction and relief. And so, you know, to some extent, people are familiar with them, although some of them got airplay in this country, but not in Canada, and some vice versa. So,
when you put them together, as you put them together, do they allow you to see either the music, hear the music, or see your career in a different perspective? I mean, you've always known that the sequence was there, but when you pack them together like that?
It's an interesting experience, actually, looking back like that, because I'm not prone to that. I don't listen to my old albums. I'm not that interested, really. I sort of did that. But for a project like this, of course, that's required, and I was relieved to find that they held up pretty well. You know, I went into it with a slight amount of trepidation, because, you know, I was going to think, what's going to be embarrassing about these old records? But in fact, there was nothing to be embarrassed about, and through the wonders of modern technology, we remastered things, remixed a couple of songs too, and generally improved the sound overall and evened it out, so everything sounds kind of current.
I want to hear a little piece of one of the songs on the disc. This is from 1982, I think. You're on the border of Guatemala, Mexico City.
83, actually.
83? Yeah. Not in Mexico City, Mexico and Guatemala.
Yeah. Refugee camps in Chiapas.
Here comes the helicopter. Second time today, everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say.
Coburn, If I Had a Rocket Launcher. It was a launch for you of a different type part of your career. It really put you in the forefront of doing the kind of politics in the songs that you'd been doing. I mean, I hear it in Wondering Where the Lions Are, but this was, you know, so straight up the nose of the people who were wondering what it was before that.
In a way it was. Those songs on that album, the Stealing Fire album, reflect my first hardcore experience of the third world, really. I'd been in, you know, in the Caribbean and been in poverty-stricken countries before, but as a tourist and not as the kind of observer that I was invited to be on that first trip to Central America. And the experience was profoundly affecting. And there's a big difference between seeing a refugee camp on TV and being in one, in every respect, you know, as, I mean, it's obvious, but first-hand experiences are always different from vicarious ones. But in this case, in the case of that song, the refugees were in very desperate straits. There were, in the two camps I visited, they numbered about 8,000 people between them, I think. And in one of those camps, the population was living on a ration of 3 tortillas a day per person. They had no medical, no access to medical care. And even though they had fled from the highlands in Guatemala into Mexico, they were still being attacked by the Guatemalan army across the border. And I was hearing the horrible things that had caused them to become refugees in the first place and seeing the poignancy of their situation, I was outraged, and that song was the product of that outrage. And after that, I did a lot of travel. There were many subsequent trips to Central America and to other places. I've been lucky enough to go to some pretty interesting parts of the world in the course of that kind of work. Once aid agencies know that you're interested and willing to do that kind of stuff, there's a lot of invitations, and I've ended up turning down invitations to some pretty exciting places, but because I just couldn't do them all. But
you had some reservations at the time about performing that song because you were afraid people would think that you were advocating the use of force.
I did have qualms about it. I got over them because I realized that for me not to sing the song, which was an honest expression of how I felt, and I think communicated something larger than my immediate feelings. To not do it would have been an exercise in self-censorship, which would have been inappropriate, more inappropriate than singing the song. So I took the risk that people might misunderstand it. And I suppose I bored a lot of people with a very long introduction to the song at the first couple of years that I was performing it live, making sure that people did know where it was coming from. But in general, I think most people got it. There were people who didn't quite get the message, but I think people responded to the sense of outrage, even if they didn't really know or care about what was going on in Central America, that a lot of people feel that pent-up thing, and it provided a bit of an outlet for them. And I don't think anybody really took it as a, you know, an incitement to go down and start killing Guatemalan soldiers.
But I thought about the song again this fall, and I wondered if you had.
Well, it got played on the radio some this fall, and I wasn't quite sure how to take that. I haven't been singing the song because I think it kind of plays into the wrong emotions right now, especially in this country. In Europe, for instance, I might do it because people are that much more removed, you know. But here, not.
Bruce Coburn is my guest. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about his music, his work as an activist, and inviting you to join us. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
From Boston University.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm in the studio with singer-songwriter Bruce Coburn.
Well, what's been done in the name of liberation, and in the name of civilization, and in the name of race, and in the name of peace, everybody loves to see justice done. Somebody else. Can you tell me how much bleeding it takes to fill a word with meaning, and how much death it takes to give a slogan breath? And how much flame gives light to a name for the hollow darkness in which nations dress? Everybody loves to see justice done on somebody else. Seen, we all have to live with what we've been. When they say charity begins at home, they're not just talking about a toilet and a telephone. Got to search the silence of the soul's wild places for a voice that can cross the spaces. These definitions that we love create these names for heaven, hero, tribe, and state. Everybody loves to see justice done on somebody else.
Bruce Cockburn. The name of that song is Justice, and it's one that you performed at Music Without Borders, which was a concert for Afghan refugees just a couple of months back.
That's right.
But you didn't just write it. It's one of those songs that sticks with you. It's one of those songs, and I want to kind of go back here. I mean, so much has happened in world politics in the last 4 or 5 months. I'm wondering how you're making sense of it.
I don't know if it's possible to entirely make sense of it all. I suppose it's helpful to view it in a historical context, and you know, it's not the first time in history we've been afflicted with the kinds of goings on that we see around us now. It's perhaps rendered more threatening by the globalization aspect of things, because it's not just business that's globalized; it's everything else. Disease and war and all sorts of stuff. I mean, everything's only a plane ride from everything else, as we know from the tragedy of September. But I think there are encouraging things about what's going on right now, perhaps, and it's really worth noting those things. The fact that, I don't know if it's true in this country, but I suspect it probably may well be that in Canada, at least, all the bookstores are sold out of the Quran. because everybody's reading it, everybody wants to understand what this Islamic thing is all about, and what, are these guys really representative of what Islam teaches, or are they not? And I can't think of a time in history when the victims or the victims' allies of an attack like that have gone to such trouble to learn about their enemy in a peaceful way. That's encouraging. Although I'm not a fan of the Pope particularly, the recent sort of pray-in that they had at the Vatican involving faith, every faith from all over the world, animists from Africa and Buddhist monks, imams from the Middle East, and every faith was represented, and that's probably a first too. I can't think of a time in history when all of the spiritual aspirations of the world have been brought together in one place to pray for peace like that. So it tells me that there's a very strong desire among people who are perhaps not natural buddies, let's say, to avoid coming to blows with each other. And, you know, I'm glad that's happening, because without that, I think we would be in a bigger state of war than we're in right now. We can't abide that.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Charlotte, Vermont. Frank's joining us now. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Well, first of all, I wanted to just tell Bruce that, you know, I appreciate the kind of work you do, and I would also like to point out that it's nice to know that some music that has some social consciousness to it is also actually good music. I mean, you listen to some things, and it's like, oh, God, put the knife in my heart now, you know. But anyway, I caught this conversation halfway in, sort of, and what I wanted to see if people wanted to touch on was the degree to which some people with a high public profile get into these causes more out of fashion and ego than out of any real sincere concern. And the reason I bring it up is within a week we saw Bono of U2 at some big meeting in New York trying to solve third world debt and make sure that multinationalism doesn't go too far. And then we see them at one of the most egregious capitalist pageants you'll ever see, which is the Super Bowl. And, I mean, I watched that performance and the way it was structured with the banners with the names on it and everything. And, my God, talk about self-aggrandizement. I found that really disgusting. I found that to be just – that is just really on my mind now after I've seen that. And I'm just wondering, people out in the music business, to what degree you see this stuff.
Well, there's a couple of things at work there. There's a general perception in the media, because the media, reporters, especially print media, reporters have this kind of, they have their own kind of fashion, a fashion of cynicism, and they're obliged to not sort of trust the motives of other people. Partly they come by that honestly, I guess, and partly it's kind of something they learn in journalism school. But and so you hear a lot in the mainstream media about how lame it is for pop stars to get involved in issues because they don't really know what they're talking about. And I find that that's mostly a media phenomenon. The people I know that embrace causes generally do have some idea of what they're embracing. And I'm acquainted a little with Bono, and he's impressed me as a man of sincerity. And I know that he's put an awful lot of time and effort into the third world debt issue. How that relates to the Super Bowl, I don't know. I didn't see the show, and so you know, I might change. I might feel like you did if I had seen it. But in general, I think, for me, it comes down to knowing what you are talking about. I think if you're going to take on an issue, you should have more connection with it than just kind of your immediate emotions when you first hear about something. And I think that the involvement will be much more effective if that's true. But I also think that that whatever the motives, it's better that people try and do things than that they don't try.
Right. Of course, no, that makes me think of another question. Have you seen people in your position sort of get stung by that, where they sort of maybe dive in with both feet and haven't really thought things through, and the next thing you know? And, yeah, I do know that we have a very cynical media. I work in film and video, and I'm entrenched in the media myself. And
what do you mean by people getting burned, Frank? Be more specific about your question.
I'm thinking, you know, pop star X, you know, name a pop star. see something going on in the world that they'd like to help correct, and before thinking through what the ramifications might be of putting themselves, a high-profile person, into the mix, I'm just wondering if there's been any personal experience with the media sort of pulling that sort of cynic stuff that that Bruce just mentioned, and someone, you know, maybe even retreating from that aspect of being a public person. You know?
Well, we saw it happen with Sting, with his work with the rainforest and the Amazon, and I don't know. I wasn't party to any of that stuff, so I don't really know what the real story is. But there was certainly a lot said in the media about how ineffectual he ended up being. But again, I think it's far better that he did the work that he did, and in the long run, it can't hurt to publicize that kind of problem, whether your immediate efforts are successful or not. I think one of the things you have to let go of if you're going to get into any kind of cause-related work is the desire to see immediate results, because you don't. And most things will get resolved after you're dead, if they get resolved at all. Jackson Brown, a friend of mine, for instance, who has paid a certain price for his political involvements in terms of radio play. I know that there's a general perception in the world of radio that he sort of committed commercial suicide by getting involved in the kinds of causes that he got involved in, but it hasn't hurt him as a person one bit, as far as I can see, and he's somebody who really does walk the walk and put his money where his mouth is. But so there are those cases, I suppose, if that's what you're talking about. But, you know, in the end...
How does it work with you, Bruce, when you're sitting down to put together a song? Is it a reaction to something that has outraged you and I've got to do that in a song? Or when you get something like... this past fall, is it, holy smokes, here's a really complicated issue. I need to find where my comfort zone is on this, because we know you've done a lot of work against landmines, and yet, you know, the American B-52s were dropping more landmines in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Things become really complicated.
Everything's complicated, and the advantage, in a way, of not knowing what you're talking about is that things are very simple, but once you do start to get inside issues, they are always complicated. And... for me, all my songs come pretty much by the same route. I get a strong emotional reaction to something, and that'll trigger the creative process, whether it's a sexual situation or a spiritual encounter or something political, so-called. All the songs kind of come about the same way. So it's not kind of, I don't sit down and go, oh, there's a cause, I better write a song about it. I think some people do that, and some of those songs are very good, but it doesn't work that way for me.
Is it hard for you, being a Canadian and performing in and writing about what's going on in the United States?
It hasn't been, to my surprise. I mean, I would have guessed that if I had a rocket launch, it would be the last song in the world to ever get airplay on American radio, but it was a hit on American radio, you know, there you go. I mean, ever since then, people have responded generally favorably to my presence here, and I'm very grateful for that.
Our number's 1-800-423-8255, and Tim's joining us from Massachusetts. Hi, Tim.
Good morning. I was wondering if Bruce, first of all, I love your work.
Thanks.
I've enjoyed your message in the past. Keep up the good work. I was wondering, as a political lyricist, if you would look at Neil Young and see, say, his song about Ohio in the 60s as definitely political, but then and negative, you know, to the U.S., and then could you see his latest song about 9/11 as supportive? And I was just wondering, for you, is it difficult to be supportive in that role as, you know, behind a common scheme, if you will?
Well, I can't really comment on Neil's motives or the content of his songs. I think that the old one, the reference to Kent State, is a sincere lament about that. But I haven't heard his song about 9/11, so I don't know what that's like. But
it picks up the president's Let's Roll.
Right. Well, I'd be somewhat skeptical of picking up anything of the president's, but...
Well, actually, I think if I could clarify that, he didn't pick up the president. He picked up the gentleman who was on the cell phone and was talking to his wife.
Oh, that's right.
No, you're quite right, yeah. Tim. I was just sort of the president's use of that became a part of that, but...
Yeah, I remember that now.
He didn't coin the phrase.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, I think in any case, The real question is, what do we do about something like this when it has been on many previous occasions appropriate to criticize the foreign policy of the United States, and it remains so. But
would you see Neil Young as a sellout?
I wouldn't see. I don't see Neil Young as anything other than a really great artist, you know. And I that's all I know about him. But I don't think that for somebody to have more than one opinion about a particular thing is. Only says that they're a human being. It doesn't say anything else.
It perhaps suggests that
they're an intelligent human being. I felt, for instance, it didn't come as an entire surprise to me that something like 9/11 happened. I mean, the scale of it and the type of thing it was, of course, was a shock to me as it was to everyone. But the fact that somebody from somewhere in the third world struck back at the United States didn't come as a surprise. And it did to a lot of Americans. Now, why is that? That's the question to ask. And what do we do about it? Well, for me, I love this country. I have a lot of friends who I love here, and it's been very good to me. And I felt outraged as much as anybody did about what happened. But I had also the sense of, you know, well, sooner or later, this was bound to happen. And it was bound to happen because of a lot of choices that have been made historically. And those can be undone. It's never too late to fix those things, but they can only be fixed if we sort of pay attention to them and if we all pay attention to them. So I think I would hope that as a result of this that the average American perhaps could be persuaded to pay more attention to what's being done in his or her name in other countries by the United States government. The state, in terms of what the reaction was to 9/11, you obviously had to do something. Couldn't let it go.
Connection listeners, our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. My guest this hour is Bruce Cockburn, and we're inviting you to join us to talk to Bruce about his music, about a new disc that he's got out, which is a collection of singles from 79 to 02. And we'll talk more about love songs when we come back, too. It's not all politics, certainly not with Bruce Cockburn. 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. My guest is Bruce Cockburn.
That's the derelict mattress and the overgrown pavement, over the tracks and through the hole in the fence. Past graffiti bright buildings and the junkyard alarm bell and the screaming police cars, and it's all present tense. It's my beat in my new town. It's my beat in my new town. Past a drunk woman reeling with her bag of provisions, down through the tunnel with the stink fuming bus, onto the bike path where it's something like freedom, and the wind in my earring whispers, trust what you must. It's my beat in my new town. It's my beat in my new town. constant and always the wheels ever whirling. Today I'm riding, tomorrow I walk. Step through forever into this very moment. The heart is pumping and the heart rocks. It's my beat. In my new town, it's my beat. In my new town, it's my beat. In my new town, it's my beat. In my new
Bruce Cockburn, name of the song, My Beat. It's about his new town, Montreal, where you've lived for a year now. And I'm listening to the song and thinking to myself about the conversation that preceded this. Once you get thundering down the runway of activist singing, songwriting in Afghanistan and landmines, where do you kind of make the space to just write about moving from one town to another or love songs, that kind of stuff?
It's not so much about making the space as about waiting for the ideas to come, period. You know, I mean, I do a lot of things that don't end up in songs, and sometimes I wish they would, but sometimes the ideas just aren't there.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255, and we're going to Deerfield, Massachusetts. Eve's joining us now. Hi, Eve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I just, I'm so happy to hear Bruce Cockburn on the air with you, and just to hear him anywhere. I just wanted to say that I was introduced to him a long time ago, probably about 20 years ago, as a college student, and just loved the music. What it said to me, it spoke to me very deeply. And after college, I went off and I did the Peace Corps, and I spent some time in Latin America, and I spent some time in Guatemala. And after that, I went off to Africa, and I did some work in Uganda. And then I went to Uzbekistan, and I did some work there. And I just, Bruce Cockburn's music always came with me wherever I traveled, because I liked it, because it was just some comfort from home, but also because when you go off as an American and you go off to do whatever it is you're going to do, you never know how you're going to be received. And even though I felt that I was doing the right thing, that I wanted to be a world citizen and I wanted to do what I thought I could do for world peace, there are days when you feel down and there are days when you feel very alone and you wonder if what you're doing is really right. And it's nice to have something like Bruce Cockburn music to sort of fall back on. Hmm. And I think that he has the world sense and the courage to speak his piece and speak his truth and do what he knows to be right. And that helped me sometimes on a bad day. So I want to thank him for that.
Well, I really appreciate that. That's very sweet. To me, I get called an activist every now and then, and I don't feel like I'm an activist. I'm at best a mouthpiece for people like you doing what you do, because that's the real work getting done. And, I don't have organizational skills or chemical skills or carpentry skills or whatever to bring to the game, but what I can bring is my ability to help get attention to the things that you guys are doing, and more power to you. Thanks.
Well, thanks. What you do is really important. It really is.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the program. To Andover, Massachusetts. David's joining us. Hi, David. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm there.
Hi, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I've been a big fan, just like the last caller, for a long time, and heard your musical style go through some changes, and I think my favorite was when the Marsh Brothers were playing mm-hmm. violin and stick. I just wonder, when you're working on a project, do you think first in the music and the words, lyrics, or do you try to put together a sound with a band or and then work from there?
Well, the songs exist first before we make plans to record. Generally, you know, when there's enough songs, then we think about how we're going to do an album, and I look at, you know, what the nature of the songs is and how we want to treat that in the studio, and then we try putting a band together based on those conclusions. And over time, you know, I also want to try different things, so I'll work with a certain group of people for a while, and then it'll seem appropriate to shake it up a bit and get some different input. So there's always some turnover in the people that I'm working with.
Well, I also wanted to make a nod. I don't know, maybe I joined this program late, but to your guitar playing, which we heard just a minute ago, always excellent and really great to watch you.
Thanks.
The closer the seat, the better.
That's what they made binoculars for, you know. But I used to, when I went to school here in Boston, everybody was sort of trying to learn everybody else's licks, and there was a guy that used to, at what was then the Club 47 that became Passim, was where everybody kind of congregated, and at the open sing sessions, there was one guy that used to show up that hung a handkerchief over his left hand so nobody could see what he was doing. I don't suppose he was any better than everybody else that was around, but he was definitely jealous of his particular technique.
Creating
so.
A little mystery.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little something of the, which to me in a way reveals the poetry that's in the lyrics. This is from Birmingham Shadows. Can we just listen to a tiny bit of this, Hoptisk?
Worked hard, now wired and hanging out. I'm curious what you might be all about. Curious too what that dark shape and the hard, shiny cruiser might do. And you have no idea what you're giving out of your own curiosity, intense energy. Tattoo on chest like the key to the puzzle of your pumping heart. Wearing your shadows all over your sleeve. Wearing the role of the young upstart. Birmingham shadows fall. You show a little, I let something show too.
A little piece of Birmingham Shadows. My guest is Bruce Coburn. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio.
I'm Ted O'Brien. We're taking every call we can in the next few moments because Valentine's Day is coming, and your $100 pledge gets you flowers or candy for the person you love and supports the station you love.
It's a very simple proposition to celebrate the news, to help keep the news coming, and to do a little bit of something for you to help your Valentine's Day celebration. We've created a little bit of a package deal. If you pledge $100 right now to WBUR or WRNI, we will send a dozen roses or a pound of chocolates, the roses from Kabloom, the chocolates from Dan's, to a person that you love. It's very simple. Pick up the phone now and dial 1-800-303-3612. Again, that's 1-800-303-3612. Or, if it's more convenient for you, you may pledge on our secure website, WBUR.org or WRNI.org. But Valentine's Day is just a few days away.
That's Assistant General Manager Steve Ellman, and he and Monica Brady-Meyerhoff are with me over the next few moments. We'll be all set for the news at the top of the hour. We'll be all set for the second hour of The Connection. But right now, we need to hear from you. And if you've never made a contribution to this radio station before, consider doing it during this fundraiser. Online at WBUR.org or WRNI.org or 1-800-303-3612.
Contribute because you love The Connection. That was just a fantastic interview with Bruce Coburn, Canadian singer-songwriter. He came into our studios, brought his guitar, gave a little live performance, and took questions from you, the listener. This is really participatory radio. This is about you. The Connection brings you into the thoughtful conversation and lets you direct the questions and answers as well. It's the kind of listening and interaction you can't get anywhere else on the radio.
It's important for you to know also how WBUR and WRNI do this programming. We do it basically with your pledges. More than half of the money that it costs, and there's millions of dollars involved in bringing you the connection, Only a Game, our other local programs, our new program On Point, Here and Now. These programs are all coming to you because of the fact that people have pledged for them. In addition to the NPR and BBC News service we provide, we're really doing something very special with your pledges. So your pledge right now really does make a difference. It helps make the news happen, and it also makes a Valentine's Day gift happen for somebody you care about. A $100 pledge at 1-800-303-3612.
Not only that, but we're not only a participatory radio station, as Monica mentioned, but Valentine's Day is a participatory holiday. And if you don't participate, you're going to wind up like Click or Clack of the Tappet Brothers sleeping in the garage. So the money you spend on roses or chocolates for your Valentine can turn into support for WBUR. A dozen roses, chocolates, or both for a $200 pledge at 1-800-303-3612. Participate in supporting the station. Participate in maintaining that important relationship.
And participate because you love listening to WBUR and WRNI, and especially love The Connection. We're going back momentarily to the second hour of The Connection, and every day you get 2 hours of live conversation, 2 hours where you are a part of the news. You get to ask the questions. It's thrown to you. It's your opportunity to ask those questions of newsmakers, performers, artists, authors from all over the world, all different kinds of topics are addressed on The Connection, and you get to participate.
So this is an opportunity for you to do something that you were going to do anyway, to buy a gift on Valentine's Day and help support the news and help support the programming that you enjoy. It's that simple. 1-800-303-3612. You make the choice. For a $100 pledge, you can send a dozen roses from Kabloom or a pound of chocolates from Dan's Chocolates to a person you care about. If you have more than one person on that list, mother, mother-in-law, father, father-in-law, and all of the other relations that you may have or friends you may have, many pledges and many gifts will be possible through WBUR.org or WRNI.org if you choose to do it online. So we offer you many options, and we hope that you'll take advantage of them right now.
Well, that's right. As you point out, Steve, Valentine's Day is not just for sweethearts. It's also for children or parents or your best friend, your colleagues at the office. I mean, I can't wait for my chocolates from my colleagues at the office.
Is that
a
hint?
Rush to the phone here, Ted.
1-800-303-3612. The point is that you're going to give that special someone flowers or candy anyway.